now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
And welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults, all the cheese in between. The movies are B, but the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Giacchetti, and today I'm going back to that amazing year of 1998 as I look at Dee Snider's Strangeland, and I'll get to it right after this.
Here we go.
In this small town.
Check this guy out.
On this quiet street.
Now we can talk to him one-on-one.
An unspeakable evil is stalking the net.
What kind of name is Captain Howdy?
He found a series of symmetrically placed puncture wounds.
He was tortured.
Welcome to my world, Detective.
Pain is a uniquely personal experience.
Oh, God, please don't let this be happening.
My badge is a forever.
My badge represents the law.
I'll kill him.
Trust me.
That's better.
There's nowhere to run.
Daddy!
There's no place to hide.
Find me.
He's got this town wired.
Gotta love this technology.
Kevin Gage.
Ready to come in?
Elizabeth Peña.
What have you done with my daughter?
Robert Englund.
Somebody's got to take that boy out.
Dee Snider.
So much flesh, so little time.
The hunt has begun.
Wanna play ball, Scarecrow?
Strangeland.
Strangeland, or sometimes called Dee Snider's Strangeland, was released October 2nd, 1998, with an 87-minute running time. Now, there is two different versions of this. The MPAA had a field day trying to go after this movie because, I don't know, it wasn't... This was before... this was after Seven and Silence of the Lambs, stuff like that, but before Saw and Hostel and all that stuff. So, I don't know. They kind of went after it. Didn't matter. Anyway, be that may. Like I said, it's called Dee Snider's Strangeland. Dee Snider is the writer on this. And then, obviously, his production companies was also part of it. Your director here is John Peplau. Producers Larry Mistrich, David L. Bushell, and of course Dee Snider, like I said. Linda Cardellini is your main. She's the girl who's kidnapped in this, and some people might know her from Freaks and Geeks, which she started in 1999 to 2000, and then from ER, and then she's been on. She was in Dead to Me on Netflix, and then has earned herself a Primetime Emmy Award, etc. Then you have Elizabeth Peña plays her mother. Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Batteries Not Included, Jacob's Ladder, La Bamba, you know, things like that. So she's been around. You've seen her before. You definitely know her. She was also in The Incredibles as Mirage. Kevin Gage is, he was in the movie Heat. This is what I know him mostly from. He was the Navy SEAL instructor in G.I. Jane, etc. And then, of course, obviously, Dee Snider here is playing Captain Howdy. And then you have Robert Englund here in a small role. If I need to explain who Robert Englund is to you, I think we have a problem. But of course, Robert Englund, small role here. He was happy to do it. And then also you have Brett Harrelson, who's the younger brother of Woody Harrelson and the son of the hitman, Charles Harrelson, which it seems crazy, but that's what it is. Anyway, like I said, your budget was about $1.1 million, but you returned just over $700,000 on this. So to say this was not a financial success would be a very true statement, because it was certainly not. You know, the problem is, and I'm going to be honest with you here, is that this movie kind of hit at the wrong time. I think this movie was a little bit ahead of its time. I think Dee Snider was trying to find something new. It's funny, in the In Search of Darkness documentary, 1995 to 1999, Dee Snider says that. He sent it to his friend Tom Savini, and Tom Savini said, "This sucks." So he took an 8-hour train ride from all that Long Island, all the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to talk to Tom Savini about, work with Tom Savini on how to fix this. And the problem is that it's just not, it's kind of derivative. It's not really what you, I don't want to be, you know, negative about it, but it never was anything too special by way of what's being offered on the screen by way of a slasher movie. But it also is just different by way of what's being portrayed here, which I understand is what Dee Snider was going for. But I just don't know if people really were ready for that right now, kind of thing. You know, you're in your post-Scream era. I don't know. It's just hard to describe. It's I've had a lot of people say to me that they just feel like nothing happens. And I also agree with the fact that it does, I find the movie interesting, and I read the novelization just recently, which I liked a lot. And it's definitely not an action-packed movie, which I'm going to say that. So the other thing is, too, it really goes into the modern primitive subculture a lot. And I feel that maybe that might have been negative, because tattooing and piercing was not accepted as much in 1998 as it is now. So a lot of people looked at them as outsiders, I think the people they were aiming at. The problem also becomes is that just because someone has tattoos and piercings does not make them horrible or evil or anything. It kind of might portray them in a bad light. I don't know if that's like how much that is, but it's just really a shame that the if it was, because I know a lot of people looked at people with piercings and tattoos and stuff as outside of or other than them. And some people had that feeling. I know when I was in college, we had a guy up at school who had pieces put underneath his skin to make it look like he had horns. He had split his tongue. He had, you know, tattoos. He had what, like, and I mean, he was, you know, you definitely saw him coming. But a lot of people tried to avoid him because they felt like he was just too different for them. And I mean, I wasn't friends with him at all. I just know who he was because, you know, he was in a couple big classes with me. But definitely wanted to stand out in the crowd. And I think that's kind of what's going on here. A lot of that is, you know, the idea that that whole subculture, which is, you know, about different expression and not about, you know, torturing people to death and, like, you know, hurting people and stuff on purpose. I don't want anyone to feel like that's what I'm saying either. I don't think Dee Snider was saying that. I think he was very clear about the fact he was probably not saying those kind of things. Anyway, let's get rolling with today with the story. Here we go. So, 15-year-old Genevieve Gage and her best friend Tiana Moore are typical high school students in Helverton, Colorado, who spent their idle time chatting with strangers in a chat room. And this is what this movie's about. This movie's about chat rooms, so AOL chat rooms and stuff. And Dee Snider had said he had he kind of thought this was going to be a really hot topic with people, and this would make but catch on. And I agree that this movie could be used as a cautionary tale about what could have happened. But I think in 1998, you know, yes. Nowadays, the amount of like, connection we have on the internet and stuff has grown so exponentially that this movie kind of looks quaint. And it certainly looks dated, I will tell you that. It definitely shows its age there. And again, not trying to be negative about it, but it definitely shows its age. After chatting with a parent student who goes to by the screen name of Captain Howdy, Genevieve and Tiana decide to attend a party at Captain Howdy's house, which is a trap. When neither Genevieve nor Tiana return home the next morning, Genevieve's mother, Tony, alerts her husband, Mike, who's a cop, with the assistance of a younger cop named Steve Christian. Detective Gage begins searching for Genevieve and Tiana. The case takes an unexpected turn when Tiana's car is pulled out of a lake, and Tiana's tortured body is inside, with her mouth sewn shut, but no sign of Genevieve. And they also find a very large spectrum piercing in there. And that starts them leading down the idea of this could be someone who is into piercing in that whole scene. Mike discovers that Captain Howdy is into body art, including a significant tattooing and piercing, branding, and scarification. But it's not until Mike's niece, Angela, informs him that Genevieve's meeting a stranger through the internet, that Mike goes to his first lead. Now, that's Amy Smart, is the in a very, very, very early role for her, and she's very in there very quickly. Where am I here? Despite the plan, okay. Meeting with Captain Howdy online, Mike attempts to get Captain Howdy invited to a party. Despite the plan goes awry, as he later figures out Captain Howdy's location and finds his torture. So what happens is Howdy figures out that they're definitely a cop or definitely someone trying to set him up, and he sends them to the neighbor's house. These two old people are in the middle of lovemaking, so to speak, when the cops all come in and stuff. It's a very weird scene. It plays out much better in the book. I mean, it's like I don't see all that in all graphic detail, but it's fine. You know, again, I'm certainly no prude. I forgot about that part of the movie. Garrett Gage finds Genevieve naked and bound with her mouth stitched shut, as well as five other teenagers who are a similar predicament. After a struggle with Captain Howdy, Mike is able to shoot him and in the leg and then arrest him. Then they discover his real name is Carlton Hendricks. Mike thinks he has closed the case, but a year later, Hendricks is declared not guilty by reason of insanity and he's put up in the psychiatric institute, only to be released 3 years later. So at this point, so D. Snyder is going in, he's getting his makeups done. The makeups would start, he said they would start around midnight and it would take about 12 hours to get them fully made up. And then they would just shoot for like 12 to 15 hours in a row because it just took too long to get him in and out of the makeup. So he had to stay in the makeup. When he's dressed as Carlton, he's got clearly makeup over the top of his face, but they didn't have to, but they took all the scarification stuff out. That must have been much easier, but it's so funny because it's Dee Snyder, but it's Dee Snyder looking like, he looks like, what's his face? In Long Legs, Nicolas Cage in Long Legs. It's just disturbing. Anyway, the Institute states that Hendrick, who has been diagnosed as schizophrenic, with severe chemical imbalance, is okay as long as he's on his medication. So Hendrick moves back into his old neighborhood because that's going to end well. While taking his medicine, Hendrick is timid and apologetic about what he did, but the memories of what Hendrick are still fresh in the minds of everyone in the residents of Helverton. Many people are unhappy about Hendrick's release, and especially a group led by Jackson Roth and Sonny McIntosh. Now, Jackson Roth, of course, is played by none other than Robert Englund, and Robert Englund leads the group that's going to go and get back, he thinks, his teenage daughter, but she's not actually there. She's in a hotel sleeping with somebody else. One night, when Roth's daughter, Kelly, is out, and Roth jumps into the conclusion that Hendricks has taken his daughter, he calls Sonny and the others, and they kidnap Hendricks. During this, Hendricks accidentally drops his medicine bottle and is run over by the car. Roth and the group then beat Hendricks and hang him from a tree. The problem is, this is all happening, and Detective Gage is outside the house, sees this happen, could have stopped this from happening, and that's the guilt that he now carries because he didn't stop this from occurring. So they hang him up, they lynch him, right, kind of gum, and they hang him from the tree, and then it starts to rain, and which happens. So now, of course, the tree branch they use is like the weakest tree branch in the world. It snaps, and Hendricks is not, you know, dead from the hanging. So this near-death experience has kind of brought him back to being Captain Howdy instead of being Carlton anymore, and now he's got revenge on his mind. After recovering, Hendricks then kills Roth's wife Madeline in front of Roth before knocking him unconscious and then kidnapping him. So this scene plays out weird. There's no way that he's physically carrying her body and the way she's moving in the scene. It clearly is her moving and then like in this weird manner, but she's supposed to be dead and he's supposed to be like marionetting her body or like puppeting her body. It's just impossible. So I saw this movie like once when I was younger and then I've rewatched it now. And I, even now I'm like, okay, that would just strike me as wrong. It just doesn't fit well. Obviously he kidnaps Sonny, he kidnaps Roth, now he's going to torture all of them. So he contacts Mike at the detective Gage at the police station. After hanging up, Hendrix brutally tortures Roth and Sonny. The next day, Tony calls Mike and tells him that Genevieve is missing. When Mike gets home with Steve, Hendrix faces on Tony's computer screen. Hendrix has Genevieve and her mouth is stitched shut again. Hendrix then tells tortures Genevieve while Mike and Tony watch on screen. After they disconnect, Genevieve, Roth, Catherine, and a few other victims are soon found alive but brutally tortured by officers responding to a call. That night after leaving the torture scene, Mike tracks Hendrix back to the club, the club that they've been in, that they originally had gone to look into the idea of the underground, this, you know, the culture, the, what do you call culture? The modern primitive culture. But what happens is Mike has offered to take me instead, and that's why they managed to find him. Okay, so after a struggle, Hendrix stands ready to kill Mike with a large meat hook chained from the ceiling. However, Mike sinks the hook into Hendrix's back, slams Hendrix in the wall, and then uses the hook to lift Hendrix off the floor. As Hendrix taunts Mike pours a flammable liquid on him and lights him on fire. Detective Carlton is able to break in and get him out of there. And that's how we leave it, kind of thing. We don't, know that he's dead. I mean, we know he's dead, but we don't know he's dead, and he sets him on fire. So the problem is with this movie. And then again, I don't mean this to be negative because I really don't like being negative because it's somebody being creative and stuff, which I appreciate, is that I think it just didn't have enough punch when it needed a punch. I think it was more restrained than it should have been at times to really push that envelope of gore over the edge. But I also think the problem was just a lot of people just weren't maybe ready for this. I don't know if that's really necessarily the case. It just was not the same. It was not exactly what we were looking for at this time. Back in 2015, there was a sequel titled Strangeland Discipline that was in development. But Snyder planned to have it rated NC-17 and later rated R version with wider exposure. He believed the unusual marketing strategy would create a buzz. Original, the film never made it to production as 2021, still hoped to make a sequel at some point, but let's be honest, it's probably not going anywhere. In 2007, 2008, there was D. Snyder's Strangeland Seven Sins. I remember this, and this is a prequel to Strangeland. It was announced that four issue limited series, but by Fangoria Comics. The first issue was released in August, and then due to the sudden closing of Fangoria Comics, the other three issues went unreleased. Because I got that, whatever, I did that. I frustration with Fangoria Comics. I was like, oh, this could be totally cool, whatever, and no. Then it stopped. And then went unreleased until the series was picked up by the Scream Factory in 2008. It just was frustrating at the time. A lot of things were frustrating with Fangoria back then. But that's another story for another day. Like how you do your subscription for life and then a month and a half later, it's Fangoria fault. Yep. Thanks. Cool. Subscribe for life at this price. You'll never have to renew. Whatever. I'm like, sounds great. Did it. Folds. Because that's the way things roll. Anyway. Overall, this concept, Dee Snyder has said this has come out of a couple of Twisted Sister songs that were on. It was actually the fourth track on the 84 release, Stay Hungry. The song entitled Horror Terra, the beginning, A, Captain Howdy, B, Street Justice. And it talks about a sadistic child murderer named Captain Howdy. So obviously it's taken right from that. Captain Howdy, of course, makes reference to The Exorcist. D. Snyder is a fan of horror, and he obviously knows his horror. So, it's just Strangeland is just a different kind of movie. Like, it's one of those I watched. I mean, the cover, the poster art of of Genevieve when Genevieve with her mouth sewn shut is really cool. I just don't know how many people just it definitely would fall to me in a cult status, because I'm sure there's people who love this movie, and honestly, when we were speaking with the people from VC Creative, Creator VC, excuse me, they seem to like it too, and they got Dee Snider in there, and also I'm not trying to knock any of that stuff. I just don't know if it is ever really going to be, you know, accepted, because I think if it was going to be widely accepted and praised, it would have happened already. I don't think this movie is going to get better as it gets older, as we move further and further into this world of technology. I think at the time it didn't catch on because a lot of people maybe didn't know about, you know, what the topics were they were talking, or, you know, it just, I don't know. It just seems like I don't mean, again, not to be mean, but it seemed like it's just lacking. It's just missing something. And I'm not 100% sure what that something is, because I'm certainly not a filmmaker, but it just seems like it's like, okay, it just kind of falls flat at times. I don't think the story's bad. I don't think the concept's over, but I just don't know if it really hits. And it's not to say that, you know, people working on it didn't do the best they could do. They did. I just don't know if what's missing there to make it that next step. So anyway, do you remember Strangeland? Did you, am I the only one who ever read the novelization? I just read it. It came out as part of this new series of books that came out. Like they did Chopping Mall, and they did a bunch of other, you know, movies from then. Current authors doing, you know, novelizations and expanding upon it. So, yeah. But do you remember Strangeland? I mean, I know Luke and I saw it, but I don't know beyond that. I don't know anybody else who initially saw it. So anyway, I'd love to hear from you guys. All right, folks. So that about wraps it up for me today. Sorry to jibber jabber so much all over the map, but that's where I am. Anyway, thank you all for your support. We hope you, we hope you enjoyed all the recent episodes. And, you know, thank you all for your patronage and coming back and helping us keep this little show going. Kind of thing. And if you have any feedback or anything, of course, just let me know. I'll gladly read it in the show. And if you have any suggestions, I'd love to hear them. All right, folks. So that about does it here. So as we say, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment.
So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?